I always like to take a minute just to listen to the silence. And for me, this is a particular honor tonight. And before you start my time, I want to say a couple of things, because there are some really important people in this room tonight. I have a couple of grandnieces that are very near and dear to my heart that I get to spoil rotten. I get to wreck years of parenting in a mere matter of days. And they're present in my life because of you. I'm not a guy that had a problem with food. I'm a guy that was utterly helpless in the face of food. I'm a guy who put on 150 pounds after having a triple bypass after nearly killing myself with alcohol. I'm a guy who's standing at this podium on feet that have had the first two toes on both removed. I have chronic neuropathy in both my legs. And the redemptive, restorative power that you introduced me to and the human beings in this room are the reason that I'm alive. So when I look at that, it's not hard for me to find. There are people in this room tonight who were there the very first night I walked into this fellowship. And if not for one of those individuals asking me a rather rude question before I left the room, like, what are you going to have for breakfast? I thought that was as intrusive as hell. You've got a different guy up here tonight. So I just want to take a moment to thank all of you for being here. And I want to take a moment to thank everybody that put this thing on. And I want to especially thank the heavens that I don't have to look for the bleeping unmute button. My name is Patrick, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous in the summer of 2015. My black and white back-to-back abstinence date is August 26th of 2020. I've been relieved of 220 pounds and no longer require diabetic medication. The miracle of redemptive and the redemptive power that I've gotten connected to in this program has allowed me to resolve sleep apnea. And I say that because I know that there are people in the room that are suffering with some of those conditions. And what I'm here to report to you is that this power in this program, I no longer have to lie about food. I no longer have to compulsively overeat. And in the foreword to the second edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a line in there that talks about permanent recovery. And that's what we have that's available in the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, if we're willing to set aside preconceived notions. I ask people questions all the time. Is it possible you're in more trouble than you think you are? And is it possible that what's preventing you from living a life beyond your ability to conceive the quality of it is an opinion about an experience you haven't had yet? Because that's what I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous with after having been in another fellowship for 11 years. I had the first 164 pages of the Big Book memorized. I can get to a podium and sound good at 420 pounds and report to you that I'm living a spiritual life. And I'm doing anything but. My actions don't match up with my ego. My actions don't match up with my intentions, and I can't get there because I can't stop eating. I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. And it's those last few words that are lined up in the Big Book. It says, we're an extreme example of self-will run riot, though we usually don't think so. They may be the most dangerous words in the book, because I'll live in self-will and I'll die in the rooms of a 12-step fellowship because lack of power is still my dilemma. I can't tap in. There are people in this room tonight who may be suffering from that spiritual malady, and they may not have overeaten in a long time. We are not saints. Are you willing to surrender to the idea that maybe you running the show isn't a good plan? I was at the 2015 International AA Convention. Scott stole my story. I told him that before I got up here. And you'll know why in a second. I'm sitting on a bench after walk. I could walk about 500 to 700 feet at a time at that point without my back locking up and my knees being in bad shape. I was wearing the most severely restrictive compression socks you can wear. And my sugars are running in the 300s. And I'm walking around the fellowship that I love, because AA saved my life too. I was walking out of intensive care wards and into liquor stores after having heart attacks during DTs in AA. And AA saved my life. And it went well for a time. But I had a triple bypass at 5 years sober, and I remember distinctly food had always played a role in my life. And I remember distinctly thinking in the this is how I respond to a triple bypass. I make really bad decisions in intensive care wards. I got to tell you. I walked out of them after having heart attacks during DTs and into liquor stores when I was drinking. And in this case, I have a triple bypass due to the damage I've done to my heart as an alcoholic. And I wake up and think, I can eat whatever I want. And I did. I put on 150 pounds in the ensuing 6 years. I am not a saint. How I've showed up here is an indicator of that. I'm messy. But yet here I stand, as healthy as I've been since I was 25 years old. I spent half the summer running around the country, going to various events like this that I get to speak at. I got to run around in the woods in Oregon. I got to run around the Rocky Mountains. I got to run the steps. Anybody here been to what's the amphitheater in Red Rocks? The steps, up and down them like a madman, on chopped up feet. The redemptive, restorative power that this program connected me to, right? I was at the 2015 AA convention. I was sitting on a bench, sweating profusely, wheezing, with a repaired heart, and a responsible recovered member of this fellowship, Overeaters Anonymous, who I'd made an acquaintance of as a result of a retreat that I'd led in the other fellowship, came up to me and said, "Patrick, how you doing?" Scott, what did I say?
Fine.
I told you. And then she grabbed my hand and said, "Patrick, how you doing?" And Scott, what did I say again?
Fine.
And then she squeezed my hand and leaned in and looked me right in the eye and said, "Patrick, you're full of shit." And I broke, because I was in pain. And she proceeded to 12-step me. I'm not a saint. And in that moment, I became willing to grow along spiritual lines. So I came home and ate like a madman for a month, because you don't put baby in a corner. And I have one speed, and it's offended. because I'm Mr. Super Sober AA guy. Right? And what's it going to look like if I've got to take a bite of this poop sandwich and surrender myself to yet another 12-step fellowship? Well, all it's going to look like is freedom from the bondage of self and a life beyond my wildest imagination to imagine, but I still have reservations. I am not a saint. I'm a donkey. Straight up donkey. So, I still don't know what happened the Sunday that I woke up. I had done a couple of drive-bys in Overeaters Anonymous, and you people were nice, but wow, you were whack. You know, that idea that you might want to go to a nutritionist and get a plan, a food plan for yourself, and the fact that you might do some things like call people. Okay, hard pass. And that you might weigh and measure your food, and you might call other people when you had something go. Okay, you know, maybe I'll try it. And the obsession was lifted like that. And I got to start on the spiritual journey. And I got to get back in this book and see myself in a different way. This is the book that I was given in my original treatment from alcohol. Right? I still pick up my chips in AA because I didn't drink. But I won't report stand at this podium and tell you that I was in recovery that whole time, because I wasn't. I was in recovery for part of it. But then I got away from recovery. I had some things happen in my life at between 5 years and yeah, good luck with that. Just kidding. Just kidding. People that know me and the timer. Yeah. That's why I always go last. I am not a saint. And now I forgot where I was. So there, it must not have been that big a deal. But I did. I surrendered to the idea that I couldn't manage what I was doing with food, and that I needed to go on the spiritual journey. And I began to find myself in this book in a new way. And what it for me, what happened was, is I came to We Agnostics. And when it said my own conception of God, I really had to do some work on that. I really had to enhance and enlarge my spiritual life, not just through the sacrifice and work with others, but to build a conception for myself that was workable. And at the beginning of my recovery in this fellowship, it happened through you, because I would ask on my calls, and I would just talk. And I would share how I was experiencing this. And I tried to get rid of the know-it-all, although, as you can probably tell, I'm getting back to being a know-it-all. But when I was asked to do this talk tonight, I went right to the page, and man, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. That God could and would if he were sought. I realized something in that moment when I read it back then, that I had turned my will and my life over to the care of God in that other fellowship. And there's a funny thing that we'll see in 12-step fellowships about, well, I took my will back. I don't think that happens. This is a personal opinion, okay? I don't think that God voluntarily gives me my will back once I give it to Him. I think I suffer because I'm resisting His will, which is to recover and to carry the message to those that still suffer. I'm avoiding my responsibility as a member of a 12-step fellowship if I don't continue to do the work here and carry the message to those that still suffer, because nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It was clearly God's will for me to be able to communicate that no one has to suffer from this disease if they can find willingness. It's been my life's purpose since I got into AA. I sponsored a lot of men there. I did well for a while, but I got away from it. And I started living a life of duality because I'm not a saint. When I came here, I began to grow again. And I began to foster a relationship with a power that I understood better. And I got to clean up and do some amends that had been long lingering in my other fellowship that I'd struggled with, because I grew up in an alcoholic home and I was witness to and victim of things that no child should be witness to or victim of. And you can let your head run to the dark places. But what you guys have allowed me to do is the freedom to seek outside help for all of that. And to be free of that, and to communicate that that's a thing. I tried to spiritually bypass a lot of the problems that I brought to the table in recovery. And you can't, the steps will not allow you to handle some things that occur in this life. They will provide you the platform from which to operate, if I'm willing to grow along spiritual lines. One of the spiritual lines I had to grow along was the idea that maybe I needed more help than I was asking for. So I end up in trauma therapy. And I begin to resolve the relationship that I had with my father. And maybe the single greatest experience that I've ever had as a member of either one of my fellowships happened when I was able to go to my father's grave and forgive him. And to see him for the man that he was and not what his alcoholism did to me. That I could separate the man from the acts. And it was a responsible, recovered member of this fellowship who gave me that piece of guidance. They said to me, "Patrick, why don't you get to know your father before you came along?" My father was 45 when I was born. He was born in Grand Marais, Minnesota in 1913. By the time he was 8 years old, he was out working with the loggers in the woods. My grandfather was a superintendent and a road builder up there. He had, oddly enough, a donkey and water bags that he would haul water to the men in the forest in the summer. It was a hard scrabble life. He had ambitions to get out of Grand Marais and to go somewhere else. And when those ambitions came up, a little thing called a depression happened, and he had to stay. And then a little thing called World War II occurred. And he became a field commissioned captain in the United States Army. And that's no mean feat. If there's any military people here, you know that a field commission is a big deal. That means that you skip officer school and you're commissioned because of your actions in the field. He was a good man. But I couldn't see it. We grow along spiritual lines, freedom from the bondage of self. I'd been so locked in my own victimhood, my own ideas about what had happened to me as a boy. But because now I'm abstinent, and because now I'm sober, and because now I'm able to have a conception of my own power, my own God, not me. Think. Let me rephrase that one. If this is being recorded, don't take that one literally. But I had a conception. And I was able to write that fine man a letter and get free. It hasn't been perfect in here. One of the reasons I talk about permanent recovery is because I've relapsed twice in this. Dishonesty for me is a relapse. If I'm dishonest about, I no longer have to lie about food and what I do with it. And the greatest example of that is I went to a fundraiser for a sober living facility that's a part of my other fellowship Thursday night, and I had my scale at the table, and I had, you know, I had ended up having to make a call, and one of the guys asked me, what are you doing there? And I didn't have to lie about it. I wasn't embarrassed. Said, I'm a member of Overeaters Anonymous, and I have to do this thing with food. For me, dishonesty is a relapse, and I've relapsed twice in here. So I don't say permanent recovery to anybody coming from a higher place. I say it because it's what's available. The book promises it to us, if we're willing to live along spiritual lines. What is it like now? I went down to Louisiana this summer, and I got to play in the heat down there, and it was hot. I mean, it hits different down there. Holy moly. But I got to play with one of my grandniece, Georgia, for hours. Out in the backyard, running the dogs and taking her to the pool and being a part of that. And then I got to go to Chicago and spend time with my other grandniece, Rose. Those poor parents. I taught that kid a couple of things that time. But I might have to go to confession over. But I get these little notes and these little texts from them, and I always think about the responsible recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous who had the courage to look me in the eye and tell me that I was full of shit. And I'll always remember the faces of the people that were in my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And I'll always remember the faces of the people that put these things together. And I'll always have a deep sense of profound gratitude. Does anybody in here ever get that stoplight cry from the gratitude bomb? Where like maybe a song comes on, or maybe you're driving in silence because it's the only place you get any silence, right? Other than the road sounds. And you'll be stopped at the stoplight and all of a sudden it just hits you. And the dude look, you know, I've gotten that. You okay? Yeah, man, I'm fine. Everything's good. There's nothing sweeter than what I found. And I'm really grateful that I was invited here to share it with you. And I hope that all of you find that spiritual path for you. You don't have to be a saint. Be who you are. Be imperfect. Be a mess. God knows I have. And I got a really good life in spite of it. Thank you.